is Tennessee Talks with United States Congressman Tim Burchett.
Hello, I'm Congressman Tim Burchett. Welcome back to another episode of Tennessee Talks. Today, I'm joined by my friend, and I do say my friend, somebody who I've admired for a long time, and I never thought when we started this thing I'd get somebody of this substance on our show. Lou, I want to warn you, Matt Gaetz says tens of 12 people watch this podcast, so but it's actually on his rotation. But anyway, and like I said, I'm a big fan, so I'm geeking out just a little bit. But you're a longtime radio host, television host, and I've asked you to come on and talk a little bit about the State of the Union address. Lou has done shows for CNN and Fox News, and he now hosts the Great American Show, and Lou Dobbs Tonight. So he's got some great insights. He's, as they say, he's been around the block. He knows what's going on. He married way above his head, and I'm glad he's here tonight for this special episode. Lou, thank you for joining me on Tennessee Talks. It's great to have you on the show. And I guess I won't dive right in. What do you expect to hear from President Biden from this speech that will be planned? Well,
first, it's an honor to be with you. And thanks so much, Congressman, for the honor. I would want to say, first of all, too, that the feeling is mutual. I admire your work and your principles, and God bless you. So as to what we're going to talk about, we're going to hear about tonight in terms of the State of the Union. When we get to the State of the Union, after 3 years of Biden, the state can only be accurately described as stressed and distressed. I can't imagine what glowing words he could offer the American people that would in any way change their understanding or their view of what this man has done to the country. On that point, I suspect he's not going to be entirely truthful. So I have minimal expectations of what we'll see or what we'll witness. And I think really the only real benefit I can imagine is just seeing how hilariously he deviates from what is obviously a nation in crisis.
A lot's been made about his cognitive skills and level. And I've gone from being angry about it to, after having conversations with him, just to having just pity, really. Do you think he'll be able to put a sentence together during this thing that will actually make some sense? You know, it just seems he's tapered off so much as of late, and you watch it unfold from when he was, and you've seen all the tapes, and I'm sure he'll get it together, but it just seems towards the end it will run out. And one thing I noticed during his last State of the Union address, Lou, was that he talked through the applause, and I was told by some folks in the know and some medical folks that he probably, if he's whatever he's taking or doing, it allows him just a certain amount of time, and they know that. And maybe that is why he talked through the applause the last time, because generally, you know, a politician, applause for me is so rare that I'm going to kind of revel in it or relish it, and I'm going to let it go, you know, but he just seemed the last time, and it was just very uncomfortable. And I worry about that. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you would think, as sparse as the applause usually is for this president, that he'd want to pause and just sort of see if he could tire them out until they did start clapping. But he goes the other way. I guess he's given up on the prospect and decides that applause line in those scripts is just a fiction of the writer's imagination. I cannot imagine what goes through this man's mind. As he stumbles onto a stage, he has to be assisted. But you know, at the same time, he has miraculously at times, which suggests to me that there's like serious chemical support for whatever he's doing. He suddenly comes out of it and lasts for maybe a half hour to 45 minutes and seems entirely, perhaps not entirely, but more rational than at any other time. And you would think after watching him for a period of weeks as leading up to that moment, they're shooting him up with something. I think it just got to be, there's just no question about it.
Yeah, I've seen it too many times on this deal, how it just all of a sudden the lights go off and then it's just this blank stare. Bidenomics, that's a phrase that I guess they brought up, but I mean, they're going to hang them with it. How's that work for you? And what do you think it's, how do you think it's worked for the average American? I see folks spending several hundred more dollars a month, not a year, a month, than they did under Trump, just for groceries, just to stay alive. I saw some economics guru was talking, and they corrected him and said, oh, no, this, he was just, it's just the price of groceries that have gone up that he was referring to, as if that was something good, you know, and it was still hundreds of dollars. You know, you can make excuses for this, but it's deficit spending. It's just the ridiculous money we're throwing around overseas, borrowing from the Chinese, you know, telling Trump he can't have $4 billion and then giving this guy $114 billion to throw at Ukraine plus, and then we know how much, and then we had over 50 incidences where we think they've stolen the money. So what's your thoughts on Bidenomics?
Well, Bidenomics is an interesting term for what has been a disastrous 3 years of Biden economic policy. Gene Sperling, one of the president's august economics advisor, recently is staring into the camera from the White House lawn. I was regaling everyone with the idea that, you know, really this is a lot of nonsense about not much, that people really are doing well, despite what their paychecks may tell them, what their prices they're looking at. And he actually said this. He said, you know, if you don't include food, if you don't include shelter, rent, and mortgage payments, if you don't include all of the basics of life, you know, it's not too bad. And I thought that was probably the brightest outlook you can have for what has been a disastrous inflationary economy that is compounded in the pressures it's putting on the American working man and woman, their families, the middle class, because of these high food prices. Everything is up double digits. Everybody knows it. And they can try to hide the statistics in any way they want to, but those statistics show up at the cash register. And there isn't an American paying any attention when he or she goes to a retail store of any sort that doesn't know what's happening. And everyone is, we're losing purchasing power. We've got the government's hand in our pockets and our wallets. And it's that simple, because these policies, I mean, the Inflation Reduction Act, are you kidding me? They name things the opposite of what they are. It was the Inflation Stimulation Act. This is an administration that has now got us running, $2 trillion in deficit every year. Every 100 days, the national debt goes up $100 trillion. I mean, it doesn't take long for all of this, as they used to say, to add up. It only takes now 300 of those days to put us 10% higher in our national debt. We right now have the largest national debt by a factor of 7 in the country, in the world. And there's no country even close to us. And we're at 126% of our GDP. I mean, it sounds pretty good to have $34 trillion in debt, doesn't it? I mean, and then you look at the size of the economy, and that is 25% less than the debt. We're a debtor nation in perpetuity, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say about this big meeting between Mike Johnson, your speaker, and Joe Biden, your president. Can I put it that way, Congressman?
Well, it is. I remember when the NRA used to say Charlton Heston is my president. And I said, well, no, not really, but just president of the NRA. I have tried to bolster our speaker's confidence on these things. I'm worried about this next omnibus spending package, of course, that we'll be voting on, I'm sure. And, you know, one thing I am glad, though, we have started breaking down the bills, and that's one thing that that we've had some success in. Now we just, I'm liking the process a little better, but the product still stinks. And I saw where Schumer has $1 million in there for some kind of a environmental awareness center in New York. Like, we need that. He ought to be looking for jobs for New York and maybe not having so many illegal aliens up there, and put $53 million in credit cards for illegals. It's something that even our veterans don't get. It's just, you know, these campaign ads are writing themselves. Unless, you know, these states are run by Marxists, I don't know how they're going to keep electing these people, but they imagine that somehow they managed to do it. But I don't know. Thanks for depressing me, Lou. I was sort of feeling good about having you on the show. Now I'm wishing I wish I had that third cup of coffee this morning. Now, President Biden, of course, they always have a guest, and it sets some sort of, you know, the tone. You know, a war hero, somebody like that that we can all cheer for. Well, the president has chosen a lady from Texas. Her name's Kate Cox. She was denied the right to get an abortion, so she traveled out of state. She found out her child had a rare chromosome disorder. You know, I've got a couple of my kinfolk that their mama was told that these kids were going to be bad shape. They should have aborted. And, you know, they're both almost genius level intelligence, incredible athletes. Just, you know, I mean, I believe it was two of them. I know one was specifically, but, you know, and I'm wondering, what does that say to America? I just don't get it. I don't get his, I mean, I realize he's rallying his base with this thing, with the abortion issue, but it's, to me, it just doesn't seem what America needs to be hearing right now.
One of the things to the State of the Union address is being inspirational and bringing people together in their pride for this nation. But his challenge is that he has done nothing. There is not a single policy, whether it's foreign policy, domestic policy, whether it is fiscal policy, economic policy. I mean, you go through the line, and there isn't, as you well know, a single thing he's done that is in the interest of the American working man and woman, their families, the middle class, or for that matter, the entire nation. It just does not happen. He shuts down energy independence. He dismisses it. He puts us into a potential war by putting in the 101st and 82nd Airborne Divisions into the eastern flank of Europe to be ready to go into Ukraine. The man and his advisors, Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, Lloyd Austin. I mean, are these the people you want to go to war with? You know, Donald Rumsfeld used to say, you go to war with the army you have, not the one you want. Well, let me tell you, I don't want this military, and I don't want these leaders going to war. It scares, Congressman, it scares me to death to think we would have an enfeebled, impaired, compromised president like this leading us as commander in chief with the people that he's selected. He works for China. He doesn't work for America. He works for the Mexican drug cartels. He doesn't work for America. He's turned over 2,000 miles of border to the cartels. So when he gets up there, it's going to be very interesting to see how the national media reacts, because they're starting to show signs, I think. I don't know what you think, but I think they're starting to show signs of being a little disenchanted with this compromised, impaired puppet president who is nothing more than a Marxist and a sellout to whoever was the highest bidder.
I agree. Got $20 million flowed through that family that we know of. Nobody's even been able to prove that they paid any taxes on it. Over my right shoulder, here's a you mentioned the military. That's a 48-star flag that was on my uncle's casket. He died fighting the Nazis. And, of course, my dad fought the Japanese. And Mama flew an airplane during the war. So I think about our military, and I think about every time I watch a video from this clown show and they have somebody in the military, some man in a dress, or, you know, they've just demoralized everything that we stand on as a country. And I honestly think, I used to think some of it was by accident, but now I don't think any of it's by accident, Lou. I think it's all by design. They want to destroy what we hold near and dear to our hearts. And they're doing a pretty darn good job of it in the last 3 years.
You're absolutely right. I mean, these people are Marxists. I call them Marxists because that's what they are. They're led by Marxists, and it's an international relationship with an international agenda as well. These aren't just globalist elites. These are people who mean to change this world to their benefit. And by the way, we won't need under that situation. They won't be asking for the consent of the governed. We won't be we the people. We will be just whatever they tell us we are, doing whatever they tell us to do. And I won't object to that pretty strongly.
We'll be the ants in line is what we'll be, just in line, whatever they say to do. Another blunder I felt like on the president's part is this student loan forgiveness. I'm sure he'll talk about that being a win for the American people. But to me, it doesn't make much sense. Some truck driver from Knoxville, Tennessee is going to pay for some kid in New York to go to Harvard or whatever. You know, it just doesn't make sense. My mom and daddy scratched and saved, and we worked, and all three of the kids got us all through college, and they paid off all their debts. And, you know, you're an adult. You sign on the dotted line on an agreement. Then all of a sudden, you know, you get there and you say, I don't like this agreement. I'm going to go back and reach and change it. It just doesn't work that way. But apparently it does. And they keep saying they're excusing the debt. Well, they're not excusing the debt. They're just passing it on to everybody else because some people made some decisions that they're basket weaving major. And I'm not knocking basket weavers. I think it's pretty cool. But just say basket weaving major, you know, their 4 years of undergraduate is not paying, and they're working as a barista down here at one of the coffee shops. You know, to me, it just doesn't make sense that we're passing this on to people, and for them to claim a success, to me, is just it's just ridiculous. Obviously, none of these kids that are defending this are accounting majors, or they would explain to you that in fact this money has to come from somewhere.
It'd be kind of interesting to find out which majors are seeking this debt forgiveness in the greatest numbers. But, you know, it's really a squeeze for our universities. They're getting debt forgiveness. In point of fact, the government then has to pay that off. That means those universities get reimbursed. And that means that all those left-wing professors indoctrinating all of those basket-weaving students are going to go straight ahead. So you got a university that isn't teaching anything but indoctrinating everyone in Marxism. But the reality is that, you know, there's no real essay that's required to get into that university, and they don't want to disturb anybody with having to have good grades. So they're not going to take your grade, your GPA average. And oh yeah, they don't want to see the ACT or the SAT because that might be too good an indicator of just how smart you are, how likely you are to use that college education in basket weaving in the free market. I mean, we're in the educational system that's going to hell in a handbasket, as my father used to say. And you know what? He's right now. Because this is the real deal. We're a nation in crisis. And you know, you've talked about it, the debt, these continuing resolutions. And by the way, I want to say this. I really admire you for, and I mean this sincerely. You stand up for Mike Johnson as speaker, and you're giving him a chance. And I really do think that that's principled and appropriate. It really is. So I just want to compliment you on that.
Well, thank you, Lou. I'm Tim Burchett, and I approve of this message. It is a redistribution of wealth, though, is clearly what's going on with this thing. And if you were to ask average Americans how they felt about the State of the Union, what do you think they would say?
I think they'd say, what were we thinking in 2020 when we voted for this man? And how irresponsible is that Marxist Democrat Party that they would put this man who is impaired, cognitively impaired, neurologically damaged, politically and financially corrupt, into this office? Because they knew who he was. I wonder about his wife, Dr. Jill, as she likes to be called. She's not a doctor. She's a PhD or an ED, whatever it may be. But she's not a medical doctor and really has no right to insist on being called a doctor. But yeah, I'm sorry.
I was going to say Whoopi Goldberg thought she'd make a great Surgeon General, I believe.
Well, you're right. And I probably, by the way, that's just not out of the realm of possibility. But for her to let this man go forward, she's not doing her husband any favors. And as a matter of fact, she's hurting him tremendously to exploit him this way for whatever her reasons. But the family, we know what the family is. I mean, they're beneficiaries of all the graft. So we know their motivation, at least on one level. It's a sorry, sad shame of what this family has done to this country and the Marxist Democrat Party. I don't think anyone should ever vote for a Democrat ever again. They're Marxist. They want to be called progressives. They want to be called liberals. They're Marxists. And the worst of them want to be called communists.
And they openly call themselves that in Congress. I mean, you have a member that's elected here locally in my hometown that speaks Marxist philosophies. And so it kind of, you know, and we allow it. We just allow it. And the reason is 20 million Americans, so-called conservatives, whatever you want to call it, decided to stay home on election day. And
it's a staggering number. I mean, 20 million people stayed home.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And the fact that it's not just the federal races, it's our local races. It's the school boards, it's the city councils, it's the county commissions, the county mayor, city mayor, sheriffs, all those things. And they, you know, we're asleep at the switch and they're going to take it from us. I always talk about this, but very poignant moments in my life. A couple of them were, one of them with my dad and I were, it was after the elections were over and we were, as I like to say, hey, we were having a traditional Italian meal. We got a pizza at Mr. Gaddy's and we're eating it there at the house. And I think you've probably heard me say this story before. And Daddy said the blessing as he always did. And we'd worked the polls that day and it was looking like Bill Clinton was going to win. I mean, a draft dodger. And I'm sitting there looking at a combat World War II veteran Marine saying the blessing. And he just said, Lord, please don't let us lose our country. Yeah. And I'll never forget that, Lou. And that's a prayer I pray every night and every day. And when I see what's going on and I see the media allowing it and what's going on our campuses these days, it just to me is just beyond belief that people just don't stand up. And I think we just need somebody to rally around. And I hope we're going to get it this time. And I hope the American public wakes up. Well, here's the part, Lou, that I hate the most about my show, not because it's ending, but I allow my guests to ask me any question that they want. So do you have a question? And it's all, as I tell the kids, it's on the internet. So just ask me anything you want and I'll try to answer it.
You got a deal. I'll start with, what is the spirit of the 118th Congress? As we head toward election day, is it optimistic? Is it pessimistic? How would you describe the mood of your colleagues and then your own?
Well, in the conservative movement, it's a mixed bag kind of, because some of the guys and gals that are very conservative are obviously getting clipped from our own party, people in our own party or formerly in leadership, things like that. And I was one of my fellow colleagues. It was one of the eight that voted to get a new speaker. I remember they said, you know, this is a this is kind of a, maybe hopefully this is the start of an awakening. And then when you see 23 or 24 of your colleagues on your own party decide to get out, that maybe that was it. And I always think of Moses. I just hope we're not having to go through the wilderness for 40 years before we figure it out, because it'll all be lost. Again, it's kind of a mixed bag. I think the morale is a little bit down, but part of that is because we need to turn off the television, and at least ABC, NBC, CBS, and CNN, some of these other guys, you know, they just run us down. I was reading the news on my feed out or out, whatever it is, and it's not really a good indicator of what's going on, but it was just all negative attacks towards things that some of them I hold very near and dear to my heart. And, you know, and you read those things and you start to question. And I try to encourage my colleagues to, you know, to just not pay attention to that. As my dad told me, another thing my dad told me shortly before he died, I was county mayor and was going through a little bit of a fight, which I always did with, you know, the Chamber of Commerce or the editors of the local daily rag, whatever you want to call it. And they were trashing me. And I remember Daddy had his massive stroke, and it wasn't long before he was going to be meeting the Lord face to face. I mean, he was on the way out at the veterans nursing home. And I walked in and he grunted out. He said, "Are they still after you?" And I said, "Yes, sir." And he said to me, "Do you really want that bunch for you?" And I thought, it's very profound. I don't want that bunch for me, because if they were for me, I know I wouldn't be doing the right thing. So back to your answer, it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag. And, you know, the Democrats are good at the carrot and the stick. Republicans are more free thinkers. And that's, you know, we catch a lot of grief on a lot of things because we don't allegedly stick together. Well, somebody puts something out I don't like, I'm not going to vote for it. I don't care if it's got an R or a D by it. Doesn't matter to me. It matters to my folks back home. So anyway, like I said, it's a mixed bag, Lou. I rambled too much. I apologize. I'm worried about our country. I just have to think, though, that we're going to do what's right and put people in office that are conservative, because it's just, and I encourage people back home to read these bills that they call and criticize me about. You know, if it's a transportation bill and less than 15% of it has to do with transportation, you know, old Tim Burchett, he's probably going to vote against it, as you know.
I love these first six appropriation bills come out to 1,000 pages. You know, that's just a little light bedtime reading. I don't think even the people who wrote it, so quote unquote wrote it, know what's in it for sure. But this is to me, it's a Congress. When I say a Congress, it's been in the Congress for a very long time. Excuse me again. We've got to get more people like you in office. We got to get a lot more people who, when we say, you know, the Sioux had a great war cry, may my enemy be worthy. Our enemies are not worthy, but they're still enemies, and they're worth beating, and we got to beat them.
Yes, sir. 100%, Lou. Again, I want to thank you for joining me today. Like I said, when I first took office a little over 5 years ago, I never thought, I wanted to do a podcast, but I never thought I'd be interviewing somebody of your caliber. So, and I don't know if it's much of an interview. I think when I get on with you, it's usually a therapy session. I think whatever people pay these therapists, I probably need to just write you a check for an hour's worth of therapy, because it's very refreshing.
I just have to send you a check too. So why don't we just call it even?
I wish my mom and daddy were alive. They would think it's a pretty big deal that you and I were buddies. So, and I always love coming on your show. You speak the truth, and that seems to be something hard to come by these days. And it's very refreshing. And Lou, thank you, brother. And I'm Congressman Tim Burchett. And I want to thank everybody for joining us again for another episode of Tennessee Talks. Thank you all for sending me here.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Tennessee Talks. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Keep up with Congressman Burchett by following Rep. Tim Burchett on Twitter and Instagram, and Congressman Tim Burchett on Facebook and YouTube.